News It Happens, WCCO, Minneapolis, St. Paul, 50 years in 74.
This is a CBS News special report, President Chooses. I'm Bruce Morton, CBS News Washington. And what the president is choosing, of course, is a running mate. Spiro Agnew has resigned. President Nixon is to go on television and radio shortly to announce the man he has chosen to replace him. That choice, of course, subject to confirmation by the Senate and the House. This is a very gossipy town when it comes to political questions, and the gossip has been running like some sort of swamp fever through Washington ever since Agnew's resignation. The scene tonight is in the East Room of the White House. There's some music in the background, which you may be able to hear, one of the military string groups that plays for these occasions. And the room is already fairly full. Large clumps of congressmen and senators have arrived, being ushered to their seats by Navy officers, other military aides. We are told that the White House will be announcing some other groups of guests shortly, the members of the cabinet, members of the diplomatic corps, and so on. The members of the Supreme Court were invited, and as a group declined to accept on the grounds that this was more of a political than a state occasion. White House correspondent Robert Pierpoint is here with me, and Bob, who's your favorite?
Bruce, I guess if I were to get into Washington's favorite guessing game at this moment, I'd be more foolish than intelligent, so I'm not even going to give you one.
You heard the White House aide announcing the president's cabinet, and here they come, led by the Secretary of State, Henry Kissinger. Those guests who have already arrived are standing up and applauding as the cabinet members come in. Treasury Secretary Shultz in second place, just behind Dr. Kissinger. We're told, incidentally, that the lucky winner, if that's the right phrase, will be in the room tonight and will speak after the president has spoken. There are a few contradictions in all this, Bob. We were also told at one point that...
Ladies and gentlemen, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, the President Pro Tem of the Senate, the Minority Leader of the Senate, and the majority and minority leaders of the House of Representatives.
The congressional leadership, headed by House Speaker Carl Albert, just behind him, the much larger figure of the Senate's President Pro Tem, James Eastland of Mississippi, Republican Leader Hugh Scott, Majority Leader Mike Mansfield, House Minority Leader Gerald Ford, who is one of the names that's been circulated here. I started to say, Bob, they said once that the nominee would be told only minutes before the announcement, but hopefully they gave him a little time to make the speech.
I'm sure they did. I think that was a little game playing by the White House, which is not above deception now and then.
Here come the first family, Julian David Eisenhower, Patricia Nixon Cox. And a round of applause for them. We don't know, obviously, who the nominee will be. Gerald Ford's name is one which has circulated considerably in this city today. ABC News at one point said essentially positively that Ford was the man. Waves of speculation have come and gone about other figures. The early boom for John Connally of Texas, I think, has subsided because a lot of congressional opposition to him has surfaced the past couple of days.
There's a report that the president asked Connally to take the job, and he turned it down. My feeling is he turned it down because the president suggested he do so.
Here are the ruffles and flourishes. Hail to the chief is next, and so is the president.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States and Mrs. Nixon.
Nixon's walking in. Mrs. Nixon, I'm always terrible at this, in a kind of bright blue dress. I don't know what shade that is, electric blue perhaps. The president in a dark suit, a white shirt, dark tie. And he's behind the rostrum now, smiling, looking very relaxed as he acknowledges the applause of this audience, which has risen to his feet to welcome him to the East Room of the White House. As soon as the applause subsides, Mr. Nixon will begin to speak, and we'll know who the man is.
Members of the cabinet, members of the Congress, members of the diplomatic corps, all of our distinguished guests here in the East Room, and my fellow Americans. I have invited you here tonight so that I could share with all of you, not only in this room, but the millions listening on television and radio, my announcement of The man whose name I shall submit to the Congress tomorrow for confirmation as Vice President of the United States. I shall ask the Congress tonight, and also when I submit the name tomorrow, to act as expeditiously as possible on this nomination because of the great challenges we face at home and abroad today. We live at a time in which we face great dangers, but also a time of very great opportunities. We can be thankful tonight that for the first time in 12 years, the United States is at peace with every nation of the world. We can also be thankful that we are in the midst of a rising expansion of our economy in which more Americans have better jobs at higher wages than at any time in the history of our country. But also on the other side, we have to recognize the fact that the peace that we have worked so hard to build not only for ourselves but for all the world is now threatened because of a new outbreak of war in the Mideast. And also, we must recognize the fact that the prosperity that we seek is plagued by an inflation which is a burden on the family budget of millions of Americans. This is a time, therefore, that we need strong and effective leadership, because the hope of the world for peace lies with the leadership that we have here in the United States of America. And our ability to build a new prosperity in this country, a prosperity without war and without inflation, lies in the need for strong leadership in the United States of America. Never in our history has the world more needed a strong America, a united America, with both the power and the will to act in the spirit that made this a great country and that has kept it a free country. And that is why, at this particular time, it is vital that we turn away from the obsessions of the past and turn to the great challenges of the future. This is a time for a new beginning for America, a new beginning in which we all dedicate ourselves to the tasks of meeting the challenges we face, seizing the opportunities for greatness, and meeting the dangers wherever they are, at home or abroad. And I'm confident tonight, as I stand here before leaders of both parties, I'm confident we shall meet those dangers and also seize those opportunities. I am confident that we shall do so, but we can and will do so only if we have the support of millions of our fellow Americans all across this land. We can and will do so only if we have bipartisan support in the Congress of the United States in matters in which no partisanship should ever enter. And we can and will do so only if we have strong, effective leadership in the executive branch of this government. These were the considerations that I had in mind as I considered what man or other individual to select as the nominee for Vice President of the United States. Let me tell you what the criteria were that I had in mind. First, and above all, the individual who serves as vice president must be qualified to be president. And second, the individual who serves as vice president of the United States must be one who shares the views of the president on the critical issues of foreign policy and national defense, which is so important if we are to play our great role, our destined role, to keep peace in the world. And third, at this particular time when we have the executive in the hands of one party and the Congress controlled by another party, it is vital that the Vice President of the United States be an individual who can work with members of both parties in the Congress in getting approval for those programs of the administration which we consider are vital for the national interest. It was these criteria that I had in mind when I pondered this decision last night and early this morning in the quiet beauty of Camp David. And the man I have selected meets those three criteria. First, he is a man who has served for 25 years in the House of Representatives with great distinction.
Gerald Ford's colleagues are on their feet applauding, and obviously that reference was to the minority leader, Gerald Ford.
Ladies and gentlemen, please don't be premature. There are several here who served 25 years in the House of Representatives. In addition to that service in the House, I should point out that in that period of time, he has earned the respect of both Democrats and Republicans. He is a man also who has been unwavering in his support of the policies that brought peace with honor for American Vietnam and in support of a policy for a strong national defense for this country, which is so essential if we are to have peace in the world. And above all, he is a man who, if the responsibilities of the great office that I hold should fall upon him, as has been the case with 8 vice presidents in our history, we could all say the leadership of America is in good hands. Our distinguished guests and my fellow Americans, I proudly present to you the man whose name I will submit to the Congress of the United States for confirmation as the Vice President of the United States, Congressman Gerald Ford of Michigan. Ladies and gentlemen, Congressman Ford knows the rules that since he now has to be confirmed by both houses, his remarks will be very brief.
Well, Mr. President, I'm deeply honored, and I'm extremely grateful, and I'm terribly humble. But I pledge to you, Mr. President, and I pledge to my colleagues in the Congress, and I pledge to the American people that to the best of my ability, if confirmed by my colleagues in the Congress, that I will do my utmost to the best of my ability to serve this country well and to perform those duties that will be my new assignment as effectively and as efficiently and with as much accomplishment as possible. Mr. President, with pride, I have supported our country's policies, both at home and abroad, aimed at seeking peace worldwide and a better well-being for all of our citizens throughout our great land. And I will continue to work with you and with the Congress in the further implementation of those policies in the months and years ahead. It seems to me that we want in America a united America. I hope I have some assets that might be helpful in working with the Congress and doing what I can throughout our country to make America a united America. And I pledge to you my full efforts, and I pledge the same to my colleagues and to the American people. Thank you very much.
And once again, the crowd of congressmen, senators, cabinet members here in the East Room of the White House have on its feet applauding Gerald Ford, minority leader of the House of Representatives, the man Mr. Nixon has just announced he's chosen to be the next vice president of the United States. Mrs. Ford, Elizabeth Ford, and Mrs. Nixon have now joined their husbands on the podium, posing for quartet-style pictures, the two couples, everybody with the arms around each other's shoulders, and the audience on its feet, and the ovation going on and on.
Green room. I know that all of you will want to meet Congressman Ford and Mrs. Ford, and we'll be in the blue room if you would like to come by and say hello, congratulate them. And also, there will be refreshments, I understand, in the state dining room in case some of you didn't have supper. Thank you. Thank you and good evening. Thank you.
That's the end of what an earlier president would have called a formal speaking. And obviously, there's going to be a party now at the White House. These guests are almost all Republicans, just a few exceptions, the Democratic congressional leadership, for instance. And this is, among other things, a party and a political kind of occasion. Ford is particularly popular with Republican congressmen, a favorite son, you might say, who in this case has won the nomination. And everybody's off to have a good time. CBS News White House correspondent Robert Pierpoint, who's been watching and listening with me, is here. Bob, what went into the decision, do you think?
It occurs to me, first of all, that the president picked a man in Gerald Ford who has an impeccable reputation as far as his personal life is concerned. I don't think there's ever been any hint of scandal about Congressman Ford. Secondly, he is a man of extreme loyalty personally to the president. During this past 5 years, we have seen a great deal of Gerald Ford at the White House. Almost every week he's been there to see the president along with the leadership. And then he comes out usually and reports to the White House correspondents on their meetings. And he has had some rough sessions with the reporters in those days in which he has defended very strongly the president's Vietnam policy, as the president himself noted this evening. And then on later occasions and somewhat less happy occasions, he's had to defend the president both on Watergate and the president's economic policies. And almost down the line, he has defended with great vigor. So it seems to me that the president has picked a man of considerable personal loyalty to him. Now, the one thing that I must say rather surprises me is that the president had said he wanted a man with experience in the fields of defense and foreign affairs. I don't quite see those criteria in Congressman Ford. But on the other hand, with his experience in the House for 25 years, and then his particularly these last few years as a minority leader, he has dealt with the problems of foreign affairs, and in all cases that I'm aware of, he has supported whatever policies the president advocated.
It's interesting, Bob. The president tonight talked not about experience in, but about someone who shared his views on foreign policy and defense. Congressman Ford certainly does that. He's a household word here and should have an easy time winning congressional confirmation. He may not be a household word to everyone who's listening, and perhaps a few seconds worth of biography is in order. Gerald Ford is 60 years old, married, four children, three sons and one daughter. He's been in the Congress ever since 1949, winning election in 1948. He became minority leader in 1965, unseating the then-reigning Republican leader, Charles Halleck of Indiana. So the man is Gerald Ford, minority leader, now President Nixon's choice for Vice President of the United States, and a choice likely to win Senate and House confirmation. With Robert Pierpoint, I'm Bruce Morton, CBS News, Washington.
And this is where you hear history as it happens. WCCO, St. Paul, Minneapolis, at 830. So the president announcing his choice for the man to be the next vice president of the United States, subject, of course, to congressional approval.